and Sangharakshita, the founding teacher of the FWBO, he's expressed the process in loads of different ways. And one of the ways he talks about it is in his system of meditation. And this has four stages, and I'm going to tell you about them. In the first stage, the mind comes together. It becomes what he calls integrated. It's a very similar idea to this notion of arrival. Our attention starts knitting together, and we become naturally focused. And it's brought about especially through meditation practice. And the classic practice at this stage is the mindfulness breathing or Anapanasati practice. But other methods also help to integrate the mind. For example, we might just decide to simplify our life. I don't know what, you know, maybe spend less time on eBay, watch less telly, go for walks or even meditate more, you know, make some decisions. Whatever works, but the effect is there's more space. We naturally feel a bit more grounded and present and solid. Also, at this stage of our lives, we start getting a bit more ethical, more consciously ethical. We consider others' needs a bit more than we did. We also start considering what are our own real needs, rather than the more superficial things that masquerade as our needs. Probably our lives become a little bit less dependent, determined by the media. We become less of a consumer, more of an individual, more of a free individual. And we do this because we just see that it makes us happier. This is quite a difficult thing to see sometimes. In fact, we start understanding from experience what actually makes us happy. We discover the correspondence between happiness and concentration of mind, integration of mind. A concentrated mind is happy on the whole. A happy mind on the whole is a concentrated mind. I mean, we know an unhappy mind can be concentrated as well, but it's concentrated in a way that Buddhism describes as unskillful. It's an, you know, that unskillful kind of concentration is an obsessive, fixed and hard concentration. It's about getting what I want. It's not spacious, it's not open, and it's not really interested in a deeper understanding. It's more like a cat catching a mouse, that kind of concentration. But real concentration of mind is not something you should have to make yourself do. You shouldn't have to screw up your face or anything like that, ideally, except give your attention. It should feel quite natural. Of course, you do sometimes need actively to turn your attention towards whatever's happening sometimes. But concentration is much more a general state of mind than something you do with your mind. And that focused, integrated state of mind is the result of all Buddhist practice. I think integration is a peculiar characteristic of Buddhism. It's something that characterizes Buddhists. Okay, so a second thing that characterizes Buddhists is positive emotion. On the whole, we're not such a miserable lot. I mean, there are exceptions I'm trying not to think of, but generally, Buddhists seem unusually friendly. I suppose if people practice ethics and meditations like the Metta Bhavana, they'll be getting familiar with positive emotions like faith in the path, confidence in themselves, kindness and encouragement towards others. Negative emotions like envy, resentment and concealment are going to find less of a place in their minds, in our minds. They'll be able to let go those negative emotions a bit because they'll have realised that they can let them go a bit. People who meditate and practice ethics experience emotions like joy, you know, like the joy of being alive. it's not such a rare thing for them. And also they experience amazement. And what about openness? That quality of spaciousness I mentioned can also be an emotion. And what is an emotion? An emotion is basically an expression of a desire of some kind. It's a wish, and probably you could take any emotion, positive or negative, and formulate it as a wish. I mean, let's try, for example, friendliness. Well, the wish there could be, I want you to be happy, or I want to help you. What about an emotion that's negative, say like envy or resentment? Well, the wish there could be, I don't want this person to be happier than me, or prettier than me, or better off, or more popular, or just nicer than me, because I can see that they are. It makes me feel bad when I see them. And this is, as some of us know, it's a really horrible state to be in. Or the wish with concealment could be, I don't want you to notice what I'm doing. Kindness, let's take a positive one. Kindness might possibly be, I'd like you to be safe from harm. And expressions of emotion like this are a bit like prayers, or else they're a bit like curses. This is just an illustration, really. It's like, generally, when you practice Dharma, you get more aware of the tone of your emotional life and its effects. And Sangharakshita calls this the stage of positive emotion in his system of meditation. It's number 2 in the list, but in terms of the process of unfolding potential, it can happen pretty much simultaneously with the stage of integration, and it can also come first. Some people are naturally very positive, but everyone can see they aren't really that concentrated. Others are quite concentrated, but everyone knows they aren't that positive. We all have different strengths and weaknesses. The main point is, positive emotion is a key quality. We all need it, and the world certainly needs it. Without love, there can be no ethics, there can be no depth of meditation, there can be no insight. So in Buddhism, the whole area of developing integration and positive emotion is mapped through what are known as the 8 levels of dhyana. I'm not going to go through them, but these are states of great purity and openness of mind and heart that are potential for everyone. They are increasingly integrated and also increasingly emotionally positive. The dhyanas, they occupy a large segment of experience that's available through skillful activity and especially meditation. But interestingly, they're short of enlightenment. You know, through your practice, you can become almost unbelievably happy and integrated. Very, very together, very, very clear and open-hearted. That you may feel like the king of the gods or the queen of the gods in heaven. And according to Buddhist tradition, it's perfectly possible that you might actually be born as the king or the queen of the gods. Or even, dare I say, as God himself, with a capital G. You know, even that, even the big G option is available if you practice really intensely. So it is said. But that's still not enlightenment. In traditional Buddhist texts, the king of the gods, the big G, is portrayed as being very happy. Yes, very happy. He's powerful. Yes, he's very powerful. And certainly, he's not stupid, but he's not wise either. He's not insightful. And for that reason, he's incapable of real compassion. This is according to traditional texts. So enlightenment, the understanding achieved and then taught by the Buddha, is something other than what is developed through ethics and ordinary meditation. I wouldn't say it's completely separate, but it's also something other. It's something other than the states of mental health and happiness known as the jhanas. the mental states experienced by gods and some more fortunate members of the human race, like people who meditate. So I'm trying to imagine what it was the Buddha was absorbing in the forest by going through these four phases of meditation. And now we come to the third phase, and this is something a bit different, because phase three is called spiritual death. Now, some people don't like that term. They feel it's negative. It puts them off, and this notion of spiritual death. I can understand that. I mean, maybe we should look for some kind of alternative term. We could maybe call it the stage of insight. I think that would be fair enough in a way, because at this stage of practice, you're less concerned with developing a good state of mind. You've done that. You'll have to keep that up. I mean, you don't stop practicing in ways that integrate the mind and develop positive emotions. But now you start engaging in various insight meditations, special reflection meditations. There are many, many approaches to this. Insightful reflection could simply be part of the way you approach metta bhavana and the mindfulness of breathing. But there are many special practices that are designed to look right into the nature of our existence and generate insight into what really is. You might, for example, meditate on the insubstantiality of things. Any things you like. You look closely at anything you like in your experience and question how exactly it exists, what kind of existence it has. It could be a physical object out there, like a plate of food, a lawnmower, or something big like a city or a planet. It could be the person sitting in front of you. It could also be you, yourself. And in each case, we can ask, what is that actually? If we're truthful, we'll eventually have to admit that we don't really know. We don't have a way to answer the question. The question actually doesn't seem to be very approachable. Beyond saying very obvious things like, a plate of food is a piece of china with food on it, and a person is, well, somebody. We don't have much we can say. And these beyond definitions or just descriptions of the experiences that we have in words, they don't tell us very much about what they actually are, about the world we're actually living in. And actually, it may take quite a long time to see how crucial this point is, to even notice that it's significant that we don't know what our world is in the first place, and that this is very, very significant. But when we do, then at last we'll have some room in our mind for some new kind of insight. I think that's what this kind of practice does. It creates room for something new. Our minds tend to be quite full, I think, already. We tend, it's like we need to hire a skip, and chuck out a lot of stuff. We're quite full. Anyway, when we start doing insight reflection, one of the first things we notice is that whatever we look at doesn't have any kind of permanent existence. It had a beginning, it's changing now, it will come to an end, sooner or later. Or again, since it is changing, it will never be quite the same again. Since it will never be quite the same again, it has, in a sense, already come to an end. At least in terms of what it was before. That has come to an end. And people are like this, for example. They're continually changing. They are never quite the same from one day to the next. They will never be quite the same again. It's happening all the time, everywhere. And just noticing this little fact, just taking in these very simple facts, can actually have quite an unexpectedly strong effect. Good effect. we might also start noticing that in our behaviour, we are sometimes in a kind of denial about impermanence. We can catch ourselves assuming or hoping that in fact certain things or certain people won't come to an end or won't even change. Some people will be begging that they might change, but other people we're kind of hoping that they won't. And this unconscious thinking, it's all very unconscious, it gets exposed when we do these insight reflections. So this whole third stage is definitely about insight, something quite different. And it comes now, after positive emotion and integration of mind have been established. Because on the whole, it's helpful and necessary to have that as a foundation for these more challenging realizations. You need a certain emotional robustness and confidence. And of course, you need a concentrated mind. Otherwise, you're not interested anyway. It's best to be nice and relaxed with the discovery that everything is impermanent, insubstantial, and empty of self-nature. And that's just not usually how we feel. Usually we cling on to the things in our lives and hope against hope that they will be solid and last forever. You need to have some emotional stability or solidity to be able to feel that actually it's okay that things never stay the same. So you can truly let your reactions go and focus on what is of genuine importance. And that's the real point of insight. So, though it definitely works to call this insight, the notion of spiritual death carries that word, that phrase, spiritual death, carries an important and essential meaning, which insight on its own does not. Because when death actually comes, what happens? Well, there is a total collapse of everything we know, everything that has become familiar. And that's also what happens with the experience of insight. Except, of course, you don't die. The familiar world around, which is largely our conceptual construction, now dissolves. After all, we've been working in our insight meditation to see through these constructions. And the practice really works. We do see through. We see what really is. It may be a very dramatic experience of the whole world being shaken and turned inside out. That often happens. Or there may be a number of less dramatic experiences, but the net effect is much the same. The bubble is burst. Now, you might think that this all sounds rather strong, but there it is. That's insight for you. It is a kind of death. Insight is threatening, at least to our egos, our comfortable collection of assumptions about reality. Therefore, insight is not something easy to handle. So Bhante's term for it, spiritual death, is very appropriate. The word insight on its own, just on its own, can suggest a kind of serene and detached understanding of things. But this is far more than that. As I say, insight is a total collapse of all our assumptions about the way things are. And this is just stage three. Death. Great. Well, fortunately, in Buddhism, there is definitely life after death. In fact, it's even that for Buddhism, death is the beginning of real life. Well, this is very, very important. You know, stage four, Sangharakshita calls spiritual rebirth. There's a spiritual renaissance. In a way, it's a whole new level of absorption and even arrival. In a way, it's a whole new integration, you could say. And this time, what is absorbed is the insight. It's a very, very important time. we need time and space to absorb our insights. And it's unfortunately a need that's often neglected by practitioners. People who've really had some kind of insight experience often do not take the time to stabilise and understand what has happened to them. Anyway, for Sangharakshita, this fourth stage of spiritual renaissance or rebirth is characterised by visualisation practice. As a stage of awakening, spiritual rebirth isn't necessarily marked by a particular kind of meditation. And simply doing visualisation meditation doesn't in itself mean that one is being spiritually reborn or is even particularly well integrated. But still, visualisation meditation is very much about spiritual rebirth, spiritual transformation. In our FWBO tradition, these practices are given to people at ordination, when they make that full-time commitment to a Buddhist path. They're introduced, say, to Tara or Manjushri or Padmasambhava, and they start to meditate on them. Most order members do this. And these practices involve, first, meditation on the shunyata, or the empty, impermanent nature of things that we've just been talking about. They start with that, and then out of that sense of impermanence, you create somehow, in your mind's eye, the presence of one of these Buddhas or Bodhisattvas who have realised that impermanence, that ultimate nature of things. And the nature of this kind of practice is though you're actually with them. You can pick up on their special atmosphere. You can receive what's known as their adhishtana, or transmission of their realization. You pick it up somehow through the practice. You receive this into yourself and you feel transformed by it. Perhaps this is a little bit like maybe with being with any teacher or Kalyanamitra you find inspiring. But here, it's the Buddha. And of course, you're doing this in your imagination, but the imagination is a very powerful thing. The Dharma really works through this kind of practice, over time, to create a special channel for this kind of transformation really to happen. There are many different sadhanas, as these practices are called, and sometimes they're much, much more complex than I've described. I don't have time to say anything much about them, but sadhanas all have these three common elements. They're all based on shunyata or emptiness meditation. They all employ the imagination of a visionary world of form and colour in which the presence of an enlightened being is evoked. That's two. And three, in all of them, there's some sort of transmission of adhishtana, the essence of the Buddha's realisation. So this little excursion into the four stages of Bhante's system was just to give some idea of the transformations that culminated in the Buddha's enlightenment. There are other important aspects to Bhante's system that I haven't mentioned, but you can see, I think, that there's a kind of complementarity of practices that can work together. Concentration of mind, positivity of heart, the ability to let go basic assumptions and die to attachment and clinging to them. And finally, that spiritual renaissance, that rebirth, that recreation of one's life in the light of the previous letting go. And these components, they're not at all rigid. They're all developed on different levels. And each of them can contain the others. And so in their own particular way, they can all lead directly to realisation of the true nature of things. And We're all, I hope, getting involved with this kind of process. We're all still arriving, actually, on this planet. We're all somehow, through this process, still arriving in this mysterious existence, all trying still to make sense of it all. I don't think we've done that. And what we need to do is get clearer and more concentrated in our lifestyle, our thinking and our meditation. In other words, become more integrated. We all need to generate positivity in these areas as well and become happier and friendlier. Stage two, right? And we all need to recognise how much we don't understand so that we can die a little to our old entrenched views about reality. Let them just drop away, at least some of them, and then allow in something new and find a more colourful life that is about awakening.